welcome to Dacom Digital. It's time to listen to the latest crypto and DeFi market integrity news and enlightening interviews with industry thought leaders.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Dacom Digital, where we give the stage to the builders, movers, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto ecosystem. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Pat LaVecchia, who is the founder and CEO of Oasis Pro Markets, an up-and-coming star in the space of enabling DeFi opportunities to institutions, and of course, connecting crypto world with the world of securities. But instead of talking about myself, I'll let you do it, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Terrific. Thank you, Chen. It's always a pleasure speaking to you, and looking forward to our discussion today, and I appreciate the invite.
No, of course. We appreciate you finding the time. You've been very busy. We joked earlier, right before we went on, that I told you it's great to see you, but I feel like I've been seeing you everywhere, and we'll get to some of those exciting news in a second. But I guess just to begin, you really do have remarkable experience in the world of finance, compliance, and regulation before founding Oasis. Would you mind just telling us a little bit about your journey, your career, and how it ultimately led you to crypto?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to keep it short. So my background is finance. I got my MBA at Wharton, and then jumped right into the finance world, investment banking. I ran groups at several large institutions, Bear Stearns and Credit Suisse First Boston globally. I ran private equity placements there. I had teams ranging in size between 15 and 25. And, we raised a lot of money, some really interesting opportunities. So I had the opportunity to be very broad in terms of industry knowledge, but not necessarily very deep, because, it was a product category, similar to how private equity works, et cetera. Then I went on to run capital markets for a couple of institutions. And in 2008, I was able to take a step back, start my own broker dealer, and have the opportunity to, in a sense, semi-retire. And I know that sounds silly. I was young, and that lasted about 3 months. And then I decided
you got tired of not having a full schedule anything. Very quickly. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny how that works, huh?
And I was too young too. But I had the opportunity to do that. So I ran a broker dealer, did a lot of interesting things with that. In 2017, getting into crypto and blockchain, had the opportunity to explore it. A friend of mine from Sweden invited me to a conference, and I went, and there were about 30 of us in the room, and it was about Bitcoin, and I was a skeptic. I thought it was just a lot of hokey. And the person to my left was from Goldman Sachs Innovation Group. The person to my right was from MasterCard Innovation Group. Wow. And I asked both of them, what are you doing here? And they said, look, really interesting. Exploring the space. And I said, okay, I should take this a little more seriously than I have been. So over the next year or so, I had the opportunity through my network to meet with a lot of different players in these emerging crypto industry. And had opportunities to partner with several. I chose to partner with one. And as I was running my broker dealer, I was also with MakerDAO, a major DeFi player. So I had a role there as well, ran compliance globally, but also I was senior advisor to the CEO, Rune Christensen, and the COO president, Stephen Becker. And that was fantastic, very deep in that for several years, saw the opportunities of DeFi and securities. So utilizing the broker-dealer, we received approval for a digital ATS, by digital ATS meaning on blockchain. And on that front, I think it's important to note that this is digitization of securities, and that's not crypto, okay? So I'm going to delineate between the two. We also got approved for something that's currently still unique, which was digital cash for digital securities trading, which allows atomic swaps what does that mean? Instantaneous transfers, settlement times in zero or just a couple of seconds, zero counterparty risk, all the benefits of blockchain. Now, take a step back. I was a skeptic about crypto because in 17, I viewed crypto and blockchain as the same thing. They're completely separate.
As many people have, right? I mean, I remember that time really well when people talked about, first of all, blockchain, like it's going to solve everything from cancer to world peace to the woes of the financial service world, but also kind of very much coalesced. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted you there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But that was the aha moment when I separated. So blockchain, the benefits of blockchain are just so evident if you have a capital markets background. So that's going back to my finance background, because again, zero counterparty risk, instantaneous transfer, lower cost. Since we're digital to digital on the ATS, it allows for, with KYC AML, this instantaneous utilizing the blockchain transfer. So we are in discussions with a lot of issuers and institutions. And on our ATS, we can have institutions, QIBs, qualified institutional buyers, accredited investors, and retail. And it's all KYC AML. But we expect for issuers that have coupons or dividends that the savings can be anywhere between 20 and 50 basis points, just utilizing the blockchain. And, again, with KYC AML. And we do all the proper reporting, et cetera. But that's what we do at Oasis Pro Markets. That's our broker dealer. We're a full service investment bank. We can do many, many things there like any other investment bank. We have our digital ATS, and our holding company is a fintech company. And what do we do there? We are going to be issuing a token potentially on a global basis. I can't go into details, but we know DeFi really, really well, and we're thinking about tokenomics there. We are potentially partnering on a global basis, Asia, Singapore, for instance, Dubai, UAE in the Middle East, EU from a variety of different venues, and the UK, and eventually South America and Africa, et cetera, other venues. But we are looking to, our tech is so strong from what we understand, white labeling partner. So we're many things, but I know today's discussion is about what we're doing here in the US with the broker dealer.
Right. Well, honestly, today's discussion, as far as I'm concerned, is about anything that is, on your mind. But also, I would say part of the reason I was keen to have you here is because I don't think there's really a realization, outside of very few spots in the crypto space, of how much deep, sophisticated, forward-looking thinking is going on enabling safe and regulated DeFi. I'm not even talking about centralized crypto, but safe and regulated DeFi opportunities to institutions. And I have to say, we were kind of getting acquainted with this industry at the same time, 2017. And I remember that back in 2017, when we founded the company, a lot of the signals we were looking for in terms of how serious it is was people like you joining the industry. So while you were, realizing that Visa and Goldman are on both your sides in the crypto event, and kind of made you, understand that this is more serious than you thought. Everyone were kind of looking for people like you with your kind of experience to join the industry, because it shows if you get the value, like you said, if people with extreme, many years of capital markets experience get the value, then obviously there's something here. Obviously we're now 5 years later, the value is significantly clearer to many more people. But anyway, sorry, but I'm just constantly impressed by how deep you're thinking about the right infrastructure for institutions to get involved with DeFi. So let me ask you for a second about that in the context of your recent raise, because you had I don't know if the word dramatically suffices here, but a dramatically oversubscribed 27 million it was your A round, right? Remember correctly, right? Which is quite a number. Obviously, that also indicates the interest from both entities like MakerDAO and the DeFi world, but also from securities. So, Tell us a little bit about the round and how it will support your plans to enable that kind of institutional infrastructure.
I appreciate that. And the critical aspect is it was a strategic round. We didn't approach VCs. And nothing against VCs, but I spent my career on Wall Street working with private equity and VCs. Right. And, you know, there's positives and negatives, more positives than negatives. But from my perspective, having been on Wall Street for you know, a long period of time, you need buy-in from the players, the institutional players on Wall Street. So that's the TradFi side, right?
Right.
And and frankly, on the DeFi side as well, without having partners who invest or, you know, have partnerships of sorts, it's very difficult to grow if you're an island. So our approach has always been partnerships and positioning. So we initially went out for just a little bit, 5 million. It quickly, within a week or two, became 10, and then it became 20. It all came together within in terms of subscriptions, about a month and a half. We had blockchain or DeFi players like TrueID, Invinium, Avalanche through their Blizzard fund. We also had major TradFi players like Redwood Trust, one of the largest RMBS issuers in the world, mm-hmm. which is coupons. Right? Coupon yielding instruments that only institutions can buy. Mirae, asset management out of Korea. They're the equivalent of the largest mutual fund company in Korea. They run about $600 billion. So they invested. We also had Gate, one of the largest crypto exchanges in the world as well, and a whole host of other great investors. So each one of those coming in has a role with us. So it's not about the money, it's right. about where we take it from there. And that's our approach to this. So we fail if we and our strategic partners who've invested in us do not have a commercial relationship going forward and benefit each other. And we're very far along on that front across the spectrum. And going forward, we've been approached by VCs already. Interestingly enough, despite this crypto ice age, which I'm calling, but you and I know, this is like the third or fourth since 2017.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've seen this before. We've been approached by strategic. My preference is strategics. But that's like broadly defined. What is a strategic? And we're right. just not interested in the cash. But it positions us really well in regards to our future growth. So several of these investors will be listing on our ATS. Several of these investors have venues outside the US, so we can expand utilizing our tech and we're compliance forward.
Right.
So that's really important. We're regulatory forward and compliance forward, which I think was a breath of fresh air. First of all, we had grayer hairs, at least some of us did.
Yeah.
Which was one thing. The other aspect was, and I think that was very beneficial because, you know, we've got a fantastic team here. We have about 20 people now. We're growing really, really quickly.
And I just saw an announcement from the governor of Connecticut that Oasis Pro Market is going to create 90 new jobs, you know, on that note. So that came just yesterday, I believe.
Very exciting. So Governor Lamont here in Connecticut is very dedicated to the fintech space. Mm-hmm. Connecticut, as many know, is the one of the finance capitals of the world in terms of hedge funds and asset managers. Right around our area, there's going to be a focus on fintech and making an investment in fintech. Digital Currency Group actually just moved in to the town next door to us. They moved from New York City to Connecticut. And Connecticut is making a substantial investment. We thank David Lehman, who is running economic development for the state, Advance Connecticut. It's a long process to get something like this.
Oh, for sure.
Really proud to be here. We think where are we in Connecticut? We're right next to New York City, right?
Right.
So it's not just about Connecticut. It includes New York City as well. This whole area in the fintech crypto space, as it grows blockchain, is going to be tremendous for the country.
Well, you know, I think people like to joke that Crypto Valley is between 14th and 20th Street in Manhattan, but it sounds to me like the real Crypto Valley is evolving a little further north in Connecticut. And I have to tell you, I spoke to a colleague from FTX recently on the podcast, Jessica Murray, the Chief Compliance Officer of FTX Digital Markets, and we talked a little bit about the relationship between basically on what the FTX's decision to be regulated and build their big offices in the Bahamas means for the local community. And I'm generally very passionate about, because, you know, we obviously are here because we believe that crypto is an opportunity to transform and make finance serve people better. But in the process, this societal connection, right, like the opportunities to bring in new people into the fold, to create a job, to create, you know, high earning and technological jobs for people around the world is really something crypto is doing a lot and not a lot of people talk about. So I really like the Connecticut example. But, you know, I want to, you know, the reason I asked about the round is because I was really struck by exactly what you're saying. You know, obviously, there's always the question of, you know, VC or strategic or combining both or et cetera. But to me, the amount of very serious institutions who are clearly seeing the value in this, who come, like you said, with a lot of different use cases. And again, I said earlier that I don't think people realize just how much sophistication of thinking is going into what you guys, what companies like you are doing, building the infrastructure. But also, I don't think people realize just how much institutions are already deep, knee deep in trying to understand how they can do DeFi responsibly. So I really appreciate you sharing some insights from that. It's a great point. But I want to, you know, challenge you a little bit because obviously, you know, we often think about innovation as technology. I think that in the crypto space, some of the most important innovation is actually about policy, regulation, and compliance. It's about how do you figure out how to fit some of these exciting new financial instruments, tools, infrastructures into something that a regulator can understand. That's part of the really big innovation. And you're a real expert on that. So I'd love, you know, some of your thoughts on what are the biggest challenges? How have you been working to solve them as you're building your offering? Let's start with that. And then we can maybe go into a little bit, what should we expect from regulators later? But let's start just with, you know, kind of your experience solving these challenges day by day, the regulatory challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chen, let me just share Solidus Labs as a partner of ours is right in the middle of this as well. And you have a lot of expertise. You've done a tremendous amount building a great team and a group of investors as well. And Solidus is going to be critical to this ecosystem growth, in my opinion. So on the compliance side, yeah, we're, again, regulatory compliance forward.
Right.
The regulators are trying. Now, let's say about 3 years ago when we, you know, started our process to get approval, when I did, we also got, when I say digital cash, that's stablecoin, CBDCs, Bitcoin and ETH. So when we started the process, we had CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. We had to explain that to the regulators. Now, there still aren't any CBDCs, but I was thinking in the future, based on, it just was a natural extension of blockchain, right? Into the TradFi world. So we would get questions like many times, not once, how do miners impact a potential transaction, right? Because the concern was with many miners in Asia, specifically China, could that have an impact on the US market,
right?
From a transaction standpoint. Valid point. Now, if you understand, you know, deeply the blockchain crypto space, but blockchain, one miner can't impact a transaction, right? It's peer-to-peer, it's global. That's one of the beauties of this whole blockchain system, this evolution of technology. So we would get questions like that. Fast forward to today, we don't get those questions anymore. They have deep technical experience teams focused on blockchain. However, blockchain is not viewed as an immutable record. at least here in the US, I believe in most venues. So we still have 33 and 34 act structures here. We right. have, and we'll work with them. Again, we're not trying to skirt anything. We go right down the middle of the fairway. That's my background. I'm a banker, and I never saw the regulators go light on anything. So that's why we took this approach.
Right.
I remember 2 years ago, lawyers, savvy lawyers, big law firms, and savvy lawyers who left big law firms just to focus on crypto, espousing, and you could go back and look at all these podcasts, that the regulators are going to go light, and ICOs are different, and they're not really, they're like securities light. We don't believe any of that. Now, we could be wrong, but our approach was, hey, we've got to play within the current act, 33 and 34, which doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Transfer agent, you have an immutable record on the blockchain.
Right.
You really need a transfer agent. Clearing agent, instantaneous transfer, atomic swap. Do you need a clearing agent? Probably not. You know, it goes on and on and on. So I think eventually we're going to get there. So we're working within these confines. The regulators are moving. They want control. They want, you know, it's about protection of the underlying investor, but also it's about protecting the financial system, because this is all right. code, right? This is code. But we'll get there. I feel really good. We'll get there. It's just a question of timing right now.
Right. You know, sorry, I interrupted you.
No.
You know, one thing that I try to remind myself a lot when it comes to this question of, you know, regulation, regulatory clarity, I have kind of two principles that I carry with me. One of them is that I think that one of the original sins of the crypto industry is that we sort of, you know, it sort of positioned itself as antagonistic to regulation rather than thinking about regulators are as partners. But I definitely think that was true 5 years ago. It's no longer true today, not only with folks like you who spent years working with regulators, but even in the most exchanges and platforms that used to be very not regulator friendly, right? But more than that, I try to remind, I think a lot about Bill Gates's a quote that we tend to overestimate what can be done in a year and underestimate what can be done in 10 years. And when it comes to crypto regulation, if you look at the past 6 months, it's frustrating. Not enough happened. It didn't move. If you look 5 years, the progress is enormous, and these things take time. And it's a process. And we just need to remind ourselves how much does an industry have achieved over 5 years, and think 5 years forward rather than will we get an SEC and will the SEC approve a spot ETF next month? Let's think, how do we make sure that in 5 years this is one of the most popular products? So anyway, sorry, just rambling on that a little bit.
Oh. Absolutely. I think in 10 years, we're going to look back, maybe five. I don't think five. I think it's 10. Say, why didn't it happen sooner? Well, we know it should happen sooner. But I think the man on the street, I think the regulators, I think, all those going through the machinations right now, thinking through this, it just makes sense, right?
Right.
But you have to work through the system and their vested interests.
Right.
So some of what we do disintermediates the banks, but I'm a Wall Street guy. I've never seen banks get disintermediated. And as a Wall Street guy, they're always thinking, I was there, I was part, okay, here are the new regs. Here's the new tech. How do we benefit from this? How can we be a part of this? And that's exactly what's going to happen. This crypto, in the crypto universe, it's different. But in terms of this regulated compliant market, the banks are vital to it. The institutions are vital. The infrastructure players, to what you just said. Solidus is right in the middle from an infrastructure standpoint.
Right.
The major custodians, you need custodians in the system, right? Hopefully we'll have third-party wallets like MetaMask and others. That will take a bit away from the custodians, but not necessarily a lot. What if a major custodian globally comes out with their own wallet and charges less for it? They're always going to be a part of this. So at least that's my view.
No, I agree. I'm curious whether you'd agree with me. I've been thinking about it a lot, but I think that we sometimes think about decentralization in a slightly overly binary way. I do believe that one of the results in the long run of the DeFi, the crypto and DeFi revolution is that there will be, for those who want, fully decentralized, disintermediated ways to get involved in finance, but they're not going to replace completely this idea of intermediaries. Essentially, the way I think about it is DeFi is extending the spectrum of potential ways to do your finances, right? Which is great, providing new opportunities, etc. But there are still going to be those many, I believe, who prefer to go in, to work with a trusted intermediary. But if you're a libertarian or just someone who prefers to do it on their own or doesn't believe in banks or, there are a million different reasons based on your values, on your risk appetite, et cetera, you could also choose to go to a fully decentralized place. So it's about extending the realm of options, creating more competition, and therefore, ultimately, providing better options for, investors, consumers, et cetera. So would you agree with that or disagree, or what are your thoughts?
I completely agree. Optionality increasing, absolutely. Institutions, I have friends who are PMs who are buying crypto, for instance, just crypto for their personal accounts, but they don't dare want to buy it, put it into their portfolios, the funds that they run for individuals and institutions, because it's not there yet. From an infrastructure basis, we're getting closer, but it's not there. But back to the disintermediation here, yes, I'll just give you an example.
Yeah, that's great.
So think about ETFs, right?
Right.
So ETFs came out in the early 2000s. I mean, even sooner than that, they were nowhere, right? And why? ETFs disintermediate asset managers. Why do you need asset managers? Then all of a sudden, iShares, BlackRock come along later in the 2000s. Today, ETFs represent, I think the latest figures I saw were 80-85% of all market trading.
Wow. Okay. I did not realize that. That is wild.
I'm pretty confident. That is wild. It's a big number. Have any of the asset managers been disintermediated? No. Right? So I see the exact same thing happening in this space with the optionality. Look,
right.
It's unique to have your own wallet. To your point, the mystery, and this was a concern for me, I use a wallet, right? I have accounts at these exchanges, and I would go over, the cryptography of every address before I sent money, and went probably four or five times, because you hear these horror stories that with Bitcoin, somebody lost $5 billion, because they lost their cryptography address or whatever it may be, or their keys, the private keys, really, right? And I'm sitting back going, hey, that UI has been taken care of. And with digital securities, I know you know this, if you lose your private key, which could still have, it's like a password, but right. But now it's a password interface with two-factor authentication, etc. And let's say somebody steals your private securities, your digitized securities. Well, that's like, these aren't bearer bonds. So if there's a whole process in place, if somebody steals your shares on a global basis here in the U.S., in regards to what's called an apostille, and you go through, additional assertions and confirmations. And guess what happens? Those particular securities get burned or removed. They can't be utilized. And new securities are issued. Now, on the blockchain, they'll be able to do the same thing. They'll actually be able to burn those particular securities so they're worthless and then reissue new securities. That level of protections is amazing. So that's very different from crypto. And right. That's the benefit of regulatory and compliance framework.
Right. And it's also a great example of how utilizing crypto and blockchain technology, you could actually create more, unlike the perception, the original perception where it's risky, it's anonymous, it doesn't have those protections. You can actually create more protections in certain contexts while using this technology, which is a really important point. Well, so we planned this for around 20 minutes. I've just been having too much fun. So, I want to, so just trying to drive us towards concluding the conversation. I do want to ask you a little bit about the current market condition. I mean, as someone who is, and some of the events that led to it, right? You know, we're very focused on risk monitoring. You know that I firmly believe that the key to growth in crypto is regulation, safety, consumer protection. And it's even truer now than before. But as someone who is, you know, at the end of the day, is in the business of enabling DeFi opportunities for institutions, what is your take on an event like Terra, for example, and what, you know, and where the market is now, and how do we get out of it, I guess? What's your take on that? What should companies be doing in the next couple of years? But let's start with how we got here, and what's the take for someone like you on Terra?
Okay. Well, you're dealing with code, right? And so going back to the blockchain, Bitcoin, Satoshi, that hasn't been hacked. That, you know, the basis of the Ethereum and Bitcoin, those blockchains, they really haven't been hacked. What's been hacked is these protocols and projects built on top of them, which is additional code. So Terra, Do Kwon was very confident in regards to what they were doing. And a lot of players invested in that, right? And whenever you're dealing with code, you have hackers coming after you thousands of times a day. And this is why the regulators were concerned about miners, right? And the impact, it's the exact same issue. So there's always human error. Code is not perfect.
Right.
And except potential, again, back to the blockchain, you know, since 2009,
Still hasn't been there.
That's why our confidence levels. So there's a fallout from that, right? Terra.
I'll just say on the Terra point, on what you're saying, it is such an important point because we often crypto talk about disintermediation and removing middlemen. The way we do it is by replacing it with blockchain and smart contracts, which is at the end of the day code. Code is written by humans. You cannot automatically remove human error by providing a tool that was created by humans. Like, you know, it's counterintuitive in a lot of different ways. And I think you're really emphasizing that point well. But sorry, in terms of the aftermath and fallout.
But excellent point. Thanks for clarifying that. So you have this issue and then this fallout, right? These centralized institutions that claimed to be decentralized because they were involved in crypto, well, they got in trouble, right? And there was leverage upon leverage, like much more. This reminds me of 2008, you know, in regards to Lehman Brothers and what occurred at Bear Stearns as well. You know, it just followed through. So it's happened before. And frankly, it's not only crypto, right? Everyone's focused on crypto. Same thing has happened on Wall Street.
When people ask me about Terra, I often say, let us not forget the meltdowns of billions and even trillions happen in traditional finance as well, not just in crypto.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the nature of finance, though, right?
Right.
So you have smart people and smart people trying to figure out a way around certain issues, right? That's why there's compliance and regulation. So, and then the fallout, right? Voyager, potentially Celsius. It seems like Celsius, cuts at Gemini and at Coinbase. You know, this 3 Arrows Capital. This is just going to continue. But a couple of things. If you've been in this space, this has happened 3 or 4 times before. Hacks have happened, not like Terra, which had this fallout from it, but going back to my experience, this reminds me of the internet in the early 2000s. The exact same thing. So it was high flying. I was at major banks. We were doing IPOs that were like, in my mind at the time, like, this is silly time. And, it was the same thing. I was investing in private companies. Others were that moonshot valuations. It's all happened before. You know, history repeats itself. So, and then a winter came, and what happened? The tide went out and those that were swimming naked were found out. The exact same thing is happening here. That's why we're looking at acquisitions right now. We're looking at acquisitions for talent more so than anything else, going back to the state of the Connecticut comment you made. in regards to what we're doing there, growing this fintech ecosystem in the state and benefiting the state and the surrounding areas. But to me, this is the internet all over again. Now, that took about 3 to 5 years to run through. And back then, the internet wasn't what it is now. Amazon was there, but not like today. Amazon was selling books and then started selling a couple other things. Most of the internet was email and news sources. Right. That's what I remember. And retail
stuff. And like AOL messaging and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But not, I mean, AOL messaging is nothing like messaging today.
And it was no, it's a complete, I remember that the most exciting thing I could do with my afternoon was to go on ICQ and message the same people that I spent the day in class with. It was just like, just the idea that you can do it was amazing. Yeah.
But it's so amazing.
It's amazing.
And it was before the iPhone, right?
Right.
And then internet winter set in and everyone's like, the internet is finished, right? The government wasn't really getting, even though it started with DARPA, you know, there were regulations. There was no income tax. I could buy stuff online without taxes, right?
Right, right.
That took a decade, right, for the states to catch up.
Such a good point.
So I view where we are today, frankly, exactly like that. So that's how I see it. We're going to get there.
My question to you, if we're comparing this to the internet, are we in the 90s already, or are we still in the 80s?
Right. I think we're in the 90s. Right.
Okay,
now.
So we're getting there.
And we're getting there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, amazing. You know, I have a cousin who was a developer. He was in his very early career in the early 2000s, and he told me that it was incredible because from being the most demanded kind of talent in the world, he couldn't find jobs for 6 months. And it happened very quickly after the dot-com bubble collapsed. And it really made me kind of think about our current situation. And I 100% agree with you. And again, it goes back to this difference between 1 year and 10 years. I know you guys are thinking 10 years forward. So are we. And it was a pleasure to hear more about your plans. I hope to have you here again soon.
Absolutely, Chen. It's been a real pleasure. It's always such a pleasure to chat with you and your insightful questions. And again, I mentioned we're so excited about Solidus. It's so vital to the growth of this ecosystem. We're positioning Oasis Pro in this ecosystem. We feel very confident. And thank you for sharing. We're not thinking 1 or 2 years out. That's part of our thought process, but it's really 10 years out. 20 years out, where right. This is going, and that's how we're building, our approach to our systems and the market.
Yeah, and from our side, we really enjoy it because we know you're not generally people in crypto, and definitely you guys are not trying to just build another system. It's about there's really a race here to build the best way to do it, and we are really excited to support and adapt our solutions, etc., as the needs evolve with this dynamic industry. So pleasure is mine to have you on the show. And of course, pleasure is ours to have you guys as partners. And other than that, I'll just wish you a wonderful weekend. I hope you get some rest. You work too hard.
Oh, no. I look at you, Chen. You're the hardest working person I see in this whole space. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad I'm able to make it look that way. It's kind of like, George from Seinfeld. There's an episode where he talks about how, in order to not get bothered, he just always tries to look really annoyed, and and people just think he's really busy. So I don't do that, but I appreciate your comment. I'm glad it looks like I'm working hard. Anyway, Pat, thank you so much. We'll chat soon, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thank you. Pleasure.
This episode of DACOM Digital was brought to you by Solidus Labs. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe and be sure to join the conversation by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.